is a place. We could absorb ourselves.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Somehow or other you did something right. Thank you. Absorb ourselves in remembering Vrindavan, cultivating feelings and experiences of separation in the path of bhakti. Could everyone hear? They cannot hear. Can you hear now? Hari Hari. Baladev can hear. Joyce, Sita. Very nice. The absolute truth, the supreme cause of all causes, the origin of everything, has achintya shakti, inconceivable potencies. Parashya shakti rivivadaiva shruyate. The Supreme Mother, the Supreme Father, the supreme ultimate object of everyone's love, or God, makes himself accessible. The Sanskrit word kripa means mercy. Mercy is when we do not deserve something, but it's given to us anyway. In order to receive mercy, access it, and appreciate it, humility is necessary. Because if we think we're really great and we deserve so many things, and then we get something, we're not really grateful for it, because we think we should get it anyway. Yes? If we just eat a huge dinner and then we overeat and then eat more and then more, and we're kind of getting sick, and somebody comes and says, "Would you like some of this?" We can't digest it. There needs to be hunger for digestion to work. In natural medicine, especially Ayurveda, this is a prominent principle, that there cannot be good health without good digestion, and there cannot be good digestion without hunger. So humility is like that hunger, where we can actually access God's grace, to be grateful. That's what we need to do. Be humble, be grateful. And gratitude is not just a feeling. It's a state of consciousness. And if it's really there, it will be expressed. And it's expressed through seva. Seva means to serve, to reciprocate. Love is reciprocal. Krishna, through Mother Nature, personally, directly or indirectly, is giving us everything. To reciprocate means we want to give something to Krishna. This is the basic principle of bhakti. If you go to the Yamuna in Vrindavan or the Ganges in Rishikesh, you'll see people with their folded palms taking water and sometimes in a fervent state of prayer, offering mantras, offering slokas from their hearts, and then pouring the water back in the Ganges. That's an offering. Does the Ganges need our handful of water? How many handfuls of water are in the Ganges? There's quadrillions of handfuls of water, and it keeps coming and coming, more and more. But still, Mother Ganga and Krishna, Bhagavan, feels forever indebted to one who offers that handful of water with affection, with love, with a desire to please. Because it's not the thing that counts, it's the purpose in which we're offering. It's the bhava. It's the love in which it's offered. If a little child runs out and picks a flower and brings it back to mother, the child stole that from the mother's garden and said, "Mother, I love you, please." The mother will cry, not because she lost a flower in the garden. She will cry because she's so touched by that thought, that my little child thought of me so much that came to give me this flower. And when the mother smiles, the child is so happy. She wants to pick every flower in the world and give it to her mother. When we praise Krishna, do you think Krishna needs our praise? When we praise God, the Almighty, whatever religion we may follow, but if that praise is an expression of our gratitude, expression of our love, those words mean more than anything, even to the Supreme. It is said, bhava grahi janardana. Janardana means the Lord who's omnipresent, omniscient, the knower of everything, the source of everything, the proprietor of everything and everyone. But who finds the greatest joy in receiving love and in giving love. Love is expressed when it is not for selfish or egoistic purposes, but it's for the pleasure of the object of our love. In the path of bhakti, especially in Vrindavan, the Supreme Absolute Truth, the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mata Sarvam Pravartati becomes one of us just to exchange love. Who is unborn is born to a mother and father. How is that possible? If we think it's impossible that God cannot be born to a mother and father because he's the source of anything, that means God can't do everything. If he could do anything and everything, then he could be born to a mother and father too. Is that logical to your Western scientific academic minds? And that is Vrindavan. See, when we approach a parent, when we approach the Supreme Truth as the Supreme Mother and Father, like a child, we usually ask things. Most children, most of the time, they're just expecting the parents to give something. Yes? And the parents are working so hard, and they're giving, and they're giving, and they're giving, and the child is demanding more, and the parents are giving, and the child wants more, and they're giving. Sometimes they're sick, and the parents are going like out of their minds, trying to do anything to save the child, and sometimes the child gets injured, and then the parents are right there, and they go to the hospital, and they're spending all their money trying to make the child nice and good, and if the child even once says thank you, that's quite rare. They just expect it. But the parent doesn't expect anything from the child, just keeps giving, giving, giving. So Vrindavan, you can be Krishna's parent. Where you're just giving, giving, and giving. And how much joy the mother experiences just giving to her child if there's motherly love. And Krishna's friends, the gopas, they play with Krishna. If they're thinking he's the almighty controller of death, in 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna shows the universal form to Arjuna, the Virat Rupa. And he sees the absolute nature of God in the form of time, literally devouring everything. And Arjuna, with great reverence, is offering prayers. And then he asks Krishna, I just want to be your friend. I can't be your friend in this form. Just come back in the form of Krishna where we could talk together and joke together and walk together. But it's based on pure love. So that Supreme Beloved who could do anything can do this too. And this is what he does in Vrindavan. And when we remember these beautiful pastimes, when we contemplate this wonderful philosophy and teaching of Bhavagrahi Janardana, Prema Pumarta Mahan, that the ultimate yearning of the heart and the ultimate destination of the feelings of our heart is in divine love. A love that is beyond death. We are sitting in a place that is Rupa Goswami's Samadhi. place where we could remember that spot in Vrindavan where Rupa Goswami lived 500 years ago, where he performed his worship, his bhajan. He wrote so many literatures. It was there, Rupa Goswami's samadhi, that Srila Prabhupada personally chose to reside because of its holiness. We can be here, and through remembering, we're actually there. You could be in Vrindavan in body, but if your mind is somewhere else, then you're not so much there. But even if you're in a little rural village in Maharashtra and you're really absorbed in thinking of Vrindavan, you're in Vrindavan. It's not a substitute, but it's a state of consciousness. Srila Rupa Goswami has written the concept of Yukta Vairagya, the perfection of renunciation, is whatever we have, our skills, our knowledge, our assets, our influences, we offer them with devotion, samsiddhirahaditoshanam, for the Lord's pleasure. Rupa Goswami, his Ishtadev, or the form of the Lord that he especially worshipped, was Govinda. It's a name of the Supreme Beloved, the name of Krishna, which means one who gives pleasure to the senses, to the cows, and to the earth. And this is very relevant for today. Some people ask, why in India do people put so much emphasis on cows? And why Krishna is called a gopa, which means he's a cowherd boy? And why Radha, the feminine divinity, the feminine aspect of Sri Krishna, she's a gopi, which means she's a cowherd girl. It's a very deep subject. But one aspect is, a cow is completely dependent on human compassion. They're not wild beasts in the jungle that go out and eat rabbits. They're domestic. If people are cruel, the cow suffers. If people are compassionate, the cow is blissful. Srila Prabhupada said that the barometer of the spiritual level of a society is how happy the cows are. But when we actually learn to connect with this spirit of compassion, it doesn't just end with cows. It actually, the cows represent all living beings who are dependent on human compassion. The animals, the fish, the environment. When exploitative, cruel people were ruling the world, in exploiting the resources of Mother Earth. Mother Earth, whose name is Bhumi, appeared in the form of a cow seeking compassion in her prayer to the Lord. So kindness and protection to cows in India represents a spirit of compassion to all beings. One time I was giving a lecture, and it was among mostly devotees of Krishna. It happened to be in the United States of America. There was a few hundred people there. And at the end, there was questions, and one person raised their hand, and there was a particular spiritual leader of a particular Western religion. And he said, "I saw the newspaper, what he eats." And it was like veal and beef and mutton and so many different things, and fishes. "What is daily menu?" He said, "Is this demoniac?" Yeah, there was cameras on me, videos. So I responded, "Would you like to hear what I said?"
Yes.
I quoted Rupa Goswami. He explained the nature of love. The more love expands to include more and more living beings, the more real our love is. And the more real our love is, the more fulfilling it is. The example Srila Prabhupada quotes Rupa Goswami, if you drop a stone in water, then the circles expand all the way to the limits of the pond. Similarly, radio waves, you know, they begin in an antenna and they expand and expand and expand. So actual love, it could begin between two people. But that's a very, very preliminary, limited type of love. And it's not very satisfying, although it's satisfying more than anything else. That's not love. But when that love expands to our whole family, and our whole community, and our whole nation, and to all humanity, and to all living beings, and to whole Mother Earth, and everything, and all living beings, and all universes, that love is ecstatic. That's the nature of the love of the soul within all of us. So this particular religious leader may be very, very compassionate and merciful to humanity, but there's a certain limit that it doesn't extend to other life-living beings, like dogs and cats and cows and sheep and goats and horses and trees. So there's a limit. I said, but don't be proud and judge them, because I know a lot of devotees who are really kind to animals, but they're quite cruel to each other. That's a limitation too. It's inclusive. It has to begin among ourselves. So today, there is much concern about the environment, the ecology. And from a spiritual perspective, especially on the path of bhakti, it's inseparable from our devotion. The Bhagavad Purana tells when you put water in the root of a tree, That water extends to every part of the tree. It's incredible. If you go to California and see those gigantic redwood trees, you pour water on the root of the tree, it goes to every part of the tree. And similarly, Janmadhyaya Shagataha, God, Lord Hari, Krishna, is the root of all existence. When we actually awaken the dormant love that's within our heart, it extends to everyone. In the Vedic literatures, not in just one place, but throughout the Vedic literatures, the earth is a manifestation of the feminine motherly aspect of God. There is Krishna and Radha, Ram and Sita, and that same Radha extends herself within the material creation as Bhumi. Bhumi is the name of the Divine Mother. Bhumi is the name of Mother Earth. And we so often say Mother Earth, but it's actually a fact. She is our mother. And the spirit, just like you're a soul within the body, but you're experiencing everything through your body. Well, the spirit of Bhumi, the Divine Mother, is the life force within Mother Earth, which is like her body. And that's why everything's growing so much. Nothing grows in your body after your soul leaves. You're dead, it just decomposes. I don't want to insult you or anything, but either it just decomposes, and it's eaten by insects and worms, or it's burned by fire. It becomes ashes. Nothing grows. But where there's growth, that's a symptom of life, is it not? So the earth planner, how many things are growing here? Because there's life. And the predominating force of the body of the earth is Bhumi, the motherly spirit. And factually, whoever we are, this is a bhakti principle. Whether we're billionaires, millionaires, upper middle class, whether we're on social, whether it's welfare, or whether we're homeless, we're all equally, totally dependent on Mother Nature. She's providing the air. She's providing water. She's providing food grains, fruits and vegetables and everything. So if we exploit Mother Earth, we're actually creating harm to every living being that's on this earth. If we pollute the air, we're polluting the air not only for ourselves and our children, but for all living beings. If we pollute the water, it's like a little baby. We're all little babies in the arms of Mother Earth. If she doesn't provide water or air, it doesn't matter how many scholarships we have, how many PhD degrees, how much money. Even if we're an Olympic gold medalist, you can't survive without water, without food. So we're little helpless babies in Mother Earth's arms. Why not be humble enough to accept that? And why not be grateful enough to stop exploiting her in big ways or small ways? You see, Mother Earth wants to just keep giving and giving and giving and giving. She's not expecting anything in return. She's really a mother. But we should honor our mother. In the Vedic culture, a highest respect and honor is always given to mothers, our biological mother, the biological mothers of others, others' mothers. Gurvani, your influence comes on me sometimes. And the cows. It's incredible. Just a few days ago, a beautiful little calf was born to a mother cow. And the calf was just born a few hours before. And calves are pretty incredible. Almost a few minutes after they're born, they stand up and start jumping around. You seen that? You know, they don't have to, you know, first get a cradle and then they just have to learn how to crawl, and then they have to, what age do children start walking? Humans. Huh? Bridget, you have so much realization when you're talking. So, according to Bridget, because the Swamis aren't so well informed on all these things, about a year old, they start walking around. Calves, within minutes old, they're jumping around. And this cow is such a peaceful, loving cow for so many years. But when a stranger came to pet the calf, and the cow charged at the, you know, charged. But you know what was really amazing? She had no intention of hitting that person, but she pretended to. She just because she was so worried about her little calf. That's love. That's motherly instinct, which is coming from love. Mother Earth is giving and giving and giving. And we, her children, all she wants from us is that what she's giving we share with each other. She doesn't want that we give anything back to her. A good mother doesn't want anything back. What makes the good mother the most happy is whatever she gives to the children share with each other. And good children will not exploit the mother. They'll respect the mother by utilizing her gifts according to her wish. When our hearts are clean, clean of greed, arrogance, the greed where we are under this influence, I just need more and more and more and more and more. Bhagavad Gita compares greed to fire. You can put fuel in fire, and it's not that the fire says, okay, you put some wood in me, now I'm satisfied. She'll burn it and demands more and more. Did you ever see a forest fire? I was born in Chicago, and I was born in 1950. And some decades before, it was in the 19th century, there was the Chicago fire. Because when I was a little boy, my father and mother would take me to the water tower, which was the only building in that whole area of Chicago that was not burnt down because it's made out of solid stone. So this fire burnt down a whole city. That's pretty hungry. That's the nature of fire. It just keeps burning. As long as there's any food and any fuel, it'll keep burning. That's the nature of greed. That's the nature of selfish passion. Just wants more and more. And the more you get, the more you have to protect. With greed comes fear. And when you have a lot, you become very arrogant. You think you have rights over others who don't. This is the disease of human society. Without that disease, people understand that Krishna is providing so much, and Mother Earth is the motherly agent that's providing it. The joy of life is whatever I can do, it's to share. That's seva, with love, for God and for God's children of all varieties. The rivers in India are called by the names of mothers, Mother Ganga, Mother Yamuna, Mother Godavari, Mother Narmada, Mother Saraswati. Because that same Bhumi Devi, that same Radha, the Shakti of the Lord, her spirit is in that river. She's the presiding spirit, and the river is like her body. And she's providing for our crops, for our homes, for our cleanliness, our hygiene, for our food, for our maintenance, for everything, to fill our wells. Are we grateful? Part of gratitude is not to pollute, not to exploit, because everyone's depending on the same water. Because this is gifts of God. Govardhan means one who nourishes and empowers the cows, the earth, the senses. All of us, we're dependent on the grace of the Lord. So environmentalism goes a lot deeper than just leaving the world a better place for our children and grandchildren. It's an inseparable aspect of our spirituality, of our gratitude and our love and our respect for our mother and our father, the Supreme Lord. And if we go to the roots of all the great spiritual paths, environmentalism, respect for the earth, not taking more than we need and causing grief to the ecology or other living beings, is natural. But somehow or other, humanity has become so disconnected. We so often don't even think about these things. You see, the world is not an illusion. The world, according to the Shastras, the Vedic literatures, the world is real. Misconceptions say it's an illusion. The world is real. These trees are real. Our bodies are real. Our minds are real. What is the illusion? When the eternal soul is thinking, this is me. When the eternal soul is thinking, I am this body and mind, and this tree is mine. That's an illusion. Maya. Maya means that which is not. The truth is, the world is God's energy. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. Isha Upanishad tells that the Supreme Being is perfect and complete. And everything that emanates from the Supreme Being, including material nature, is perfect and complete. But its manifestations are temporary. Prakriti means the material energy. Material energy is eternal. But the manifestations are temporary. But it's real. The body's real. The soul is real. But for the soul to think I'm the body, that's an illusion. To live with respect. To live with gratitude. To live with humility. To live with courage based on humility. Humility doesn't make us cowardly. Humility makes us very courageous, but not with arrogance, not to exploit others, but fearless to do the right, to protect. That is Dharma. To see all the beautiful gifts of the world as God's energy. And when we see pollution and all kinds of other stuff, we see what is happening to God's energy. But we see that potential within it. If you have a knife, you can heal someone or kill somebody. Is the knife good or bad? Everything in this world has its positive divine purpose. If we see that potential. So Govardhan Eco Village is based on these simple principles of Vrindavan, where we're trying to see that everything is God's blessing when we see its connection to God and use it for the service of God, which means by sharing it with each other and respecting. I'll give an example. There's something we all have in common. We need to eat. Yes? And there's something else we all have in common. After we eat, it needs to come out. Now that's a big problem. You know, here in India there's 1.2 billion people who are eating. And all those 1.2 billion humans, it's coming out. What to do? Now you can see it as a problem, or you could see it as a blessing. I'm not being sentimental, I'm being philosophical. I don't want to go into too many graphic details, but there is urine and stool, and you could be Miss Sweden or Miss America or still smells the same, looks the same, nobody likes it. You know, in India sometimes they just do it on the railway tracks. We, in the Western countries, we have very nice flushing toilets, where you go in the bathroom, and sometimes there's all kinds of fragrances there in the bathroom. You know, I've seen there's like, I don't know how they work, but every few seconds it goes pss, 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 and this mist comes out, and it's this fragrance. Huh? And I remember when I was a little boy, there was a toilet paper called Charmin, and it was so soft. People would go to the stores and just put it, this toilet paper. So, you know, people like these things. I'm not criticizing, I'm just pointing out. And then it goes into the toilet, and it's not that you just leave it there, because, you know, it's disgusting. You flush it. Now the problem is, for you, it's gone. It's taken about 3 gallons of water to do it, right? Several gallons of water for one flush. That's valuable water. And that water's gone. It's just mixed up with your deposit. So you think, no, okay, it's gone. It's out of my house. But the problem is it has to go somewhere. And often it goes in rivers. Often it gets merged into wells. And when there's so many people doing, what do we do with it all? So if we see it as a problem, it's a problem. But bhakti means to sight to see the positive opportunity in every situation. And that comes naturally when we're living in harmony with yoga means harmony, union, the harmony of the body, with the mind, with the heart, with the soul. And through that union of the body, mind, and soul, the union of our soul with the Supreme Soul, the Param Atma, or as Raghunath says, the Super Soul. That's Krishna, the Lord within our heart. To live in harmony with God. And when we're living it with harmony with God, we naturally learn to live in harmony with each other, with humanity, with other species, and with our environment. So we created a symbiotic biotechnology plant where your stool and urine goes. Have you been up there yet? Please raise your hand if you've been there. Raise your hand if you've not been there. Well, even if you haven't been there, you have been contributing since you've been here. And all that substance, liquid and solid substance, it goes into, through gravity forces, it goes to a pond of water or a tank, and then through solar power it's pumped up, and then it just, it goes through different layers, naturally by gravity, of stones and rocks and certain types of soils and roots and plants, and it becomes completely purified. And if you go up there, it's like paradise. It's incredible. Usually you think of a sewage refinery as something really disgusting, but there's so many beautiful flowers, red flowers, white flowers, yellow flowers, blue flowers, purple flowers, so many flowers, and the flowers are so fragrant. And every time you flush your toilet, you should know that the flowers bloom with more enthusiasm, and they spread the sweet fragrance, and that fragrance is your stool and urine. It's a fact. It's your stool and urine that's just been transformed. into a soft, beautiful flower with a sweet fragrance. Jasmine. Roses. It's just a matter of seeing how things work in this world. Everything is interconnected. We used to have a papaya tree. And the papayas up there were 2 to 3 times bigger than the papayas in other parts of our eco-village. And one Jivamukti yoga teacher called it a poopaya. But what happened is, during the rainy season this year, that there was a big storm and the papaya tree got knocked down. But still, we used to say, every time you flush your toilet, the papayas get bigger. But now we say, every time you flush your toilet, the flowers get sweeter. And that's actually even nicer. And then the water is stored in a tank and it goes into the fields as wonderful water. It's very pure. And it could even go back into the sewage system. So not a drop is wasted. It's just seeing the potential. And Jesus says in Bible, seek it, ye shall find. If we're looking for the potential, then we'll find it. Where you're living on that side of the eco-village, all the houses are made out of these mud blocks, the bricks. You're walking on the brick, you're walking every day on the ground. What do we think? Seek and you shall find. The potential. We just take that same dirt we're walking on through some natural, traditional technology. We take the dirt, we sift it, we add certain portions of water and certain portions of some other, natural additives, lime or something, according to, the soil. And then we press it into bricks. We have that pressing machine. You pass it every day on your way to your rooms, and then dry it in the sun. There's practically, compared to rather other bricks, it's hardly 1% of the imprint on energy for this technology. It's the sun that bakes it. And traditionally, those bricks, if you take care of your house nicely, could carry on for hundreds of years. So if we just see the potential where we're walking, we could build houses out of this, and beautiful houses. It's raining. Water is so precious. Great thinkers, sociologists, are claiming that this, just as there's been wars in the past based on coal and oil, it's very likely there may be wars fighting for water. It's quite inconceivable. When I was a little boy, we just drank the water out of the tap. It was as inconceivable as thinking of a cell phone where you're just... When cell phones came out, I didn't have one. I had a landline. I called my father from India. And we talked, and at the end of the conversation, he said, you know where I am? I said, no. He said, I'm sitting on a toilet in the 9th hole of a golf course. I said, I'm sorry. I thought he was home. But the idea that you'd have to buy water was just as inconceivable as a cell phone. What is it? If crazy, buy water? Or how many people buy water? Why? Because the water's so polluted. Water's precious. when it rains, it's a gift. This part of Maharashtra, so many droughts. It's one of the highest rates of suicides in the world because farmers, due to droughts, they just can't maintain themselves. And a large portion of the slums and the beggars in Mumbai and other cities in India is because farmers, there's no water for their crops. They can't survive. They just leave their homes. But water conservation, water harvesting, when the water comes, save it. It'll last all year and be prosperous. We see the potential. And seeing the potential is not just a scientific concept. It's born of feeling gratitude to Krishna, our name of God, for providing all of these things. To give protection to all the different kinds of animals, to the birds, to the fish, to give protection to Mother Earth and all the trees. We won one award because somebody came to see our building materials of how we built things with these bricks. And one of the things that impressed them most was that we built around the trees. We didn't cut the trees. I said, this is very serious. Why should we cut a tree? There's a soul in a tree. Sometimes you may have to. But we should be conscious as far as possible to honor others, to see all living beings as the children of the same God, just as we are. And not feel arrogant. I'm a human. Because we're that arrogant. We become arrogant I have the superior sex, I have the superior nation, I have the superior religion. The superior religion is where we feel completely humble before the beauty, the sweetness, and the greatness of God. And inseparable to that is we give honor and respect to all living beings. Amani namana dena. That's greatness. That's strongness. So this Vrindavan forest in Govardhan Eco Village, it's actually just a very small, simple attempt to try to tune our own consciousness in, individually and as a community, to the beauty of God's grace, and to reciprocate with gratitude, with compassion to each other, and to the whole environment, and to see and recognize and appreciate the gifts in the way we live. I really hope you have a nice time while you're here. Because when beautiful, wonderful, illustrious, enlightened people like all of you who have come from so many places, Baladev, Joyce, and Sita came from Brazil today. We have Shyam Sundari Devi, such a lovely group of saintly people have come from Colombia. We have people from China, and we have people from Sweden and Germany and different parts of Europe, Australia, America, Long Beach, Detroit, New York, Washington, D.C., Gary, did you all meet Gary? If you read The Journey Home, there was a person in it named Gary. And I like to tell the story. I was with his mother. And his uncle Ralph had read the book, and he was asking me some questions about it. And then his mother, Bernice, who I've known since I'm about 8 years old. Now I'm 66, so that's kind of a long time. She said, "I read your book." And I said, "Did you like it?" And I was kind of afraid to ask her. She said, "How could I not like it? It's all about my son." That's the way mothers are. Love is not always logical. He's coming from Malibu. But when all of you beautiful from Israel, wonderful devotee. And some people from India too. And it's just such a joy and such an honor. What is the joy and honor that all the community has the privilege of serving all of you and trying to share the joy of what we hold so sacred in our lives with all of you and to receive the blessings of all of you. Thank you very much. Gaurvani, will you be doing singing kirtan now?
You like to sing kirtan?
I already did.
Gaurvani Prabhu ki Jai. Swami Maharaj ki
Jai. Thank you.